Have you ever heard someone complain that texting and digital communication is making us dumber? That using emojis or abbreviations in writing makes us forget how to use proper grammar?
Those people aren't alone. Media outlets like the BBC and LA Times have written articles about how text speak is ruining the English language.
Well, our guest today disagrees. She argues that the way we communicate in text, emails, and tweets is streamlining our language and updating it for the 21st century.
Lauren Collister is a sociolinguist at the University of Pittsburgh. She joins us now to talk more about how our language is evolving right before our eyes and at our fingertips. Lauren, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, this is a pretty common complaint, Lauren, and maybe a gut feeling among a lot of people, even if they don't say it out loud. But you say, no, the effects of digital communication, neither good nor bad. It's just part of a process of change. Why is that?
Well, language has been evolving for as long as language exists. So to illustrate particularly why I feel like text speak is not actually ruining language, I've shared in my article in the New Republic in Quartz some of the research from linguists who research online language and text speak. And it turns out these forms really do interesting things with language that we haven't necessarily seen before. And this is because technology has brought written language into everyday use and in way more contexts than ever before.
And to put it into context, as you said, this is not the first time that in history people have cried foul over the way a language seems to be heading, that it's going down the tubes, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there's a really great TED Talk by linguist John McWhorter. And in this talk, he shares stories that basically come from all across time of people complaining about language change. And one example that particularly struck me was in 63 AD, this Roman scholar was grousing that students of Latin were writing in an artificial language, but that language was one that would eventually become French.
And is this common in linguistics where you're kind of pushing back against popular culture? There's a lot of griping about language change, but the linguists are saying, no, no, this is natural, this is evolution.
Actually, it's a really common thing to do in linguistics. We have a very descriptive approach to language, and that is that we like to look at language how it is actually used by the speakers who are actually using it out there every day in their lives, and to take that actual everyday use and analyze it and study it for signs of language change. Always in the past, we've had to get ideas of how language changed from looking at historical texts from different time periods and comparing them across times, but now we can see it happening right before our eyes in the speech that's recorded every day or written online.
Well, for instance, it sounds like we can pinpoint the very first time someone used an emoticon, and now they're so prevalent, and we have emojis and emoticons. Can you give us a little bit of the story behind them?
Well, the first ever use of emoticon is attributed to a guy at Carnegie Mellon University, and his name was Scott Fallman. And it was from 1982 in an email where he suggested the colon hyphen close parentheses, or the smiley face with a nose in it, as a joke marker to indicate sarcasm or wisecracks, because it was really hard to tell when his colleagues were being sarcastic. And he also, in that same email, used the first instance of the frown emoticon with the other parentheses in it. So this is the very first use of the emoticon that we know of, but it has really evolved into emojis now with technology platforms evolving and changing to take advantage of new technology capabilities. We can put animated emoji and different kinds of emoji. We have the whole list on our phones that we can pull up anytime we want. We don't have to rely on sequences of symbols.
What's the advantage of the emoji? What can they convey that words can't, or what can they convey that words can't efficiently?
So emoji and emoticons are really cool because they function as what linguists call discourse markers. And discourse markers are these little bits of language that convey the tone or the overlying meaning of what we're saying. Kind of like what Scott Fallman was saying, we need a sarcasm marker so that we can understand the tone. We usually do this in spoken language with our voice or our tone. It might rise and fall to indicate these things. But when you have text only, that's not really an option. So people started using emoticons as a way to give some emotion or inflection to their writing. So, for example, I might type, I've had a great day, but if I follow it with a frown emoticon, that might indicate that I'm being sarcastic about my great day.
So it sounds like you're saying there are all these emotional layers of nuance that we can indicate in text now that we couldn't before, that you could really only do with a voice. So it's getting, I guess it sounds like you think it's making language go a little deeper.
Maybe not a little bit deeper, but it is doing a lot of conversational things that maybe very difficult to do in spoken language or hard to learn or pick up on in a very condensed and concise way. Another example of this that comes from my own research is the use of the asterisk or the star above the 8 on the keyboard. It works as a correction device in many online communities and outlets. So if I make a typo in something that I'm writing and I don't want you to think that I really don't know how to spell that word, or maybe I have completely obscured my meaning by misspelling it, I might use that asterisk to indicate that I'm making a correction and type it out correctly. If we did this in spoken language, it would require saying, oh, oops, I mean, or I meant to say, but I actually said. So it's a very complex thing to actually say out loud that has been reduced to a single symbol in online communication.
Talking to Lauren Collister about the impact of texting in online language on the English language. She says, well, a lot of us sad face about this. There are many reasons to happy face. Lauren, one of the reasons we might sad face is this is something associated with the youth, the kids, and often there's a sense that if the kids are changing something, they're doing it wrong or making it worse over time. Do you think that's part of the reason people are upset about these changes?
Oh, absolutely. And it's this kids these days argument has been going on forever. So there's this famous quote from 1871 from the president of Harvard University. Charles Eliot was his name, and he's complaining about bad spelling, incorrectness, inelegance of expression in writing among young men otherwise well-prepared for college these days. And that was in 1871 at Harvard, and it's still the same refrain today. And it's this kind of complaint has been going on for a long time, but it really is the youth who are the drivers of language change because they are acquiring new forms as they're learning language and as they're learning how to socially interact with peers and getting out there in the world in new contexts. So they're taking that language that they've learned and applying it to all these various new contexts, like today, the internet and text messaging.
What do you think about how it sort of bled over into the way that we speak? Now, instead of maybe just laughing, we might just say LOL, you know, and express it that way.
Hashtag yeah.
Absolutely. It has bled into speech. In fact, a colleague of mine at the University of Pittsburgh related a story similar to what you said a few moments ago, where she was waiting in line and two students were behind her. One student said, well, I'm having such a bad hair day, frowny face. And her friend said, well, it's really humid and your hair doesn't look bad, so smiley face. And it's these emoticons getting in their way into spoken language. It's really interesting, but I want to make sure to mention that I only, as a college teacher and person who's been hanging around with people using the internet for most of my life, I only see people using these in very casual conversations. I don't think if any of these folks, those students in line behind my colleague, would go into a job interview, for example, that they would use this kind of language. This is an example of what linguists call register, the fact that our language changes depending on the context. So it could be said, in fact, that using these online forms are indicating a more casual tone of voice.
Do you think that the use of this text language, and as you said, just the fact that we are writing or typing way more than we used to in text form, is inspiring creativity, positive creation in language?
Oh, yes, of course. And I think the fact that we do have so many more casual outlets for our written language has provided people with more opportunity to express themselves in using the written word and using textual language that they may not have had before. I know that some of the students in classes that I teach are always concerned about having their formal writing in class analyzed for grammatical correctness or using commas correctly or whatever else they might be concerned about. And you know, conversely, they have many more outlets to express themselves using language and using writing and doing more with language that way that's available to them to use outside of the classroom, outside of traditional formal writing contexts.
So do you think that despite all the positives you're pointing out, we're really going to want to see great novels or see any great novels written with lots of emojis and hashtags and LOLZs? I mean, I'm sure they're out there already now, but would you really want a whole novel like that? Is it like another register problem?
I think that's a register problem there, too. I think strategically using these kinds of forms may add an extra layer of meaning in a novel. So if you were, for example, writing a novel about a teenager who may switch their style of speaking between talking to their friends and talking to other people, you may want to incorporate some of these, you know, casual forms into their dialogue, for example. But having the entire novel written this way may, it doesn't adhere to our standards of what we expect novels to be. And while that may be very innovative and different and very cool, it's not probably not going to catch on anytime soon, because we do have these longstanding traditions of what a novel really is.
Taking a longer view as we wrap up, Lauren, let's flash forward a couple hundred years and speculate, how much will the English language look like it does now? How alien will it look to us at that point?
Well, if you consider the English language of a couple hundred years ago, it's still readable to us, but there are many words and phrases that we can't make sense of, or that we need to understand before we go into reading this to understand the context. With the acceleration of technology and the advent of new ways of communicating that are going on all the time, I can hardly hazard a guess. But with increasing voice-to-text capabilities that are happening more and more every day, I'm wondering if that will be an even more important part of our communication.
Well, Lauren, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
And that was Lauren Collister from the University of Pittsburgh, her recent piece on texting and languages linked on the Central Time Facebook page.